Hello, listener. Welcome to another edition of Show Me State of Mind. And I am so happy to be here today. I'm joined by two very special guests and friends of mine. With me today is Dr. Rick Gowdy, who was formerly the division director of the Division of Behavioral Health for the Department of Mental Health there in Missouri. And a real legend in a lot of ways. And another legend is with me today with a capital LEGEND, and that is Ted Solomon, who is an OG original CBHL. And we're here today to kind of talk about some of the work that Dr. Gowdy and Ted are famous for in their work with law enforcement and programs and initiatives that the state of Missouri, I think, has done. About better than any other state in the country on kind of rolling out and really serving and making important connections between groups that were maybe not connected before as well as they could have been. So, welcome, Dr. Gowdy, and welcome, Ted.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, let's start with you, Rick, if you don't mind. I introduced you as the division director of behavioral health, but you had a long career inside and outside the department. Could you tell us a little bit about what you did before you became division director?
Yeah, sure. I started with the department as a psychology intern at what was then Mid-Missouri Mental Health Center. It's now Missouri Psychiatric Center. But I was an intern there. And then after internship, I became a staff psychologist and did forensic evaluations and worked on an inpatient unit. I did that for about 7 years. And then I became the director of forensic services for the department, where I had statewide responsibility for all of our secure inpatient forensic operations in our hospitals and all of our community programs. And I did that for about 20 years. And then I was deputy director of the Division of Behavioral Health for about a year with Mark Stringer. And then when Mark Stringer became director, I became division director for behavioral health, where I was responsible for all of our community and inpatient operations. And I did that for 5 years until I retired. And now I am back at Fulton State Hospital doing forensic evaluation, something I started out doing more than 30 years ago. So come full circle.
That's great. Now, Rick, I know you miss most the legislative process. You really miss being over in those hearings for hours and hours and hours, don't you?
That is one way to frame that, Brent.
It's great not having to be there, I'll tell you. No offense to anyone listening who loves hearings, but those can be painful. Now, Rick, also just briefly for the listener, we know each other a little bit even outside of work. We've worked together for an awful long time. But I love the fact that we would see each other on the soccer fields. For those of you that don't know, Dr. Gowdy is a longtime Central Region referee and leader in that group for soccer. And my daughter played a lot of soccer growing up, and I'd see Rick out on the soccer fields quite a bit. That was always kind of fun, wasn't it, Rick?
It was. I don't know what that says about your regular job when you relax on the weekends by being a sports official, but that's what I did. I guess I really loved all the cheering from the fans. Like, that was a great call, ref.
All the support from the fans, the wild parents saying, "Thanks for that call against my kid, Rick. That was great."
They came to see you, I'm sure.
There you
That's
go.
right. All right. Well, Rick, thanks for being here today. And Ted, good to see you. And tell us a little bit. You've had a long career as a community behavioral health liaison, but you came to the program originally, but you had a career before that too. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My career is really as a counselor. I'm an LPC, licensed professional counselor. So I go way back into the, I guess, early 90s is when I became a licensed counselor. I worked for an agency, doing counseling, as it progressed, I did a little bit of supervision, administrative supervision and stuff. Moved to Washington State, worked in a hospital for a bit, a psychiatric hospital, doing assessments for the for folks that were coming in, came back to Missouri. Actually, in Washington, I worked also at an agency, worked with kids, adults, had kids while I was out there. And so the work I was doing with kids, I was really interested in because I hadn't been around a kid since I was a kid. So worked some with kids and kids who were like kids and families who were the child was in the foster care system. So that was a focus of my work out there. Came back, was doing therapy, was doing middle management, and then took on the CBHL role.
Great, great. I did not know you were out in Washington State. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Glad you came back to Missouri, that's for sure. Well, Rick, let's get into it. So this thing called, at the time it was a CMHL, now it's been kind of rebranded as a CBHL, but you were here at the creation. And tell us, can you tell the listener a little bit about like what your memory is of kind of the why or the what happened, so to speak, that created the program, a few of the folks that were involved, and give us a little history of what you remember back then.
Yeah, this unfortunately started with a tragedy. On December 14th, 2012, there was a school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and 20 little kids and six staff members lost their lives in that mass shooting. And it was just a day or two after that that then Governor Jay Nixon, he summoned our then director Keith Schaefer over, and he said, "Keith, I want to do something about crisis. I want to make a real difference. I don't want us to just talk. I don't want us to just enhance existing programs. I want us to do something different." And so Schaefer came back, Director Schaefer came back and gave us that charge and said he needed it by the first of the year. And if my memory serves me right, I think given the holidays, we had about 7 or 8 days to invent some sort of game-changing initiative, which in Keith's mind was more than plenty of time.
Yeah, that's my memory too. Yep.
But I think we did meet that challenge, and we came up with this package that came to be called Strengthening Missouri's Mental Health System. And two parts of that, it was a multi-part program, but two parts of that were: one, enhancing and coordinating the existing efforts of crisis intervention teams for law enforcement, and then our community behavioral health liaison program, which was a completely new effort that we had to start from scratch.
Yeah, I remember. I think, Rick, I could be wrong, but I think I remember an emergency meeting right around a holiday, maybe around 4:30. I can't remember the details, but my brain tells me it was something quite extraordinary. Not with Keith. He did that a lot, I think, but this one seemed right around a holiday, and it was a big challenge, as I remember.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so Ted, so then, like Rick says, this program gets kind of rolled out. It goes through the General Assembly legislative process. It's about a $10 million initiative, as I remember, Rick, overall in general revenue. And so not a ton of money, but the big piece of it that we're here for today is hiring 31, and the science behind the creation of that number was interesting too, Rick. I think it was just kind of Compass would need two here, and BJC might need two there, and we'd do one there, and it just kind of rolled into this very scientific method. But
Brent, we had a very sophisticated algorithm to make that.
very sophisticated algorithm. That's right, and we came up with 31. And so, tell us, like, how did this get rolled out? That got signed. Fiscal year started in July. We started kind of developing some program stuff, and then sometime, probably, I guess, in the late summer, fall, did you get a notice of a position? How did you come to find out about this?
Well, yeah, I did. I got a notice of a position. I was a, I guess I was a middle manager at, now it's Compass Health. Back then it was Pathways. And, one of my bosses, sends me a job description, and I looked at it and I get back to her and I said, not sure if I know anybody that would Not sure if I know anybody. I don't really work in Jeff City, Lake of the Ozarks. I worked in Columbia. And so she said, I was like, I'll get back, I'll think about it, I'll get back to you. And she said, no, for you. I was like, really? Okay. So I looked at it a little closer and I thought, this would be very different for me because I'm used to like working in an office and working with clients that come in and doing some supervision. But I think I was about ready for a change, and I gave it a look, and so I'm glad I did.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and the description, if it probably said it had to have said something about law enforcement, and that was kind of at least of an interest to you.
I think I was just interested really in doing something a little bit different because I'd done what I was doing for a while, and that was just the only times I really thought about law enforcement were when I was driving maybe a little bit too fast, and there was a so I hadn't really thought much about what law enforcement does, but I thought this will be different, so thought I'd give it a try.
That's great. That's great. Well, speaking of that, I remember Rick when this was first being talked about, and to Ted's point around how we thought of law enforcement and mental health and just not really connecting. I had a CEO, I'll never forget, because right about the time this was created is when I left the Department of Mental Health and came to the Missouri Behavioral Health Council. So this transition was always fascinating because I had my toe in the beginning of its creation and then ruin out kind of for the implementation part. But I distinctly remember a CEO telling me, well, we have great relationships with law enforcement. And I know the sheriff and da da da. And then like a months later, them saying, I had no idea we really didn't have a relationship at all. But you kind of told the reason for the creation. But what do you recall about like I remember being a little scared. We might even overpromise, but we had to think about, be really thoughtful about these positions, didn't we?
I knew from the start that the CBHLs should serve law enforcement in the courts, and that was it. Because, the peril was trying to serve everyone, you serve no one well. And the demand was great out there, but it was important to me that we serve a constituency and we serve them well and we serve them completely. And so there was initial pressure to extend their services because the need was so great. Schools wanted public administrators, probation and parole. And then when the program got up and running and people saw what these CBHLs were doing, the pressure became even greater. But, we always held firm on that, knowing that the founding principle remained true, that we needed to serve law enforcement and the courts, and we needed to serve them well. And, I didn't have any objection to serving other folks, but, if you wanted to do that, by all means, go and invent the program and find funding for it, but just leave the CBHL alone. And ultimately, we had some pretty good protection for that because Governor Nixon became just such a champion and a cheerleader for the CBHLs and for behavioral health in general. So, I think there were a lot of things we didn't know starting out, but knowing that we needed to keep it true to who they needed to serve, I think was really important.
Yeah, I distinctly remember Rick, pressure for kids. And I remember once you saying that, how in not all adult cases too, but there could be some of those kid cases that could just drain so much time away, that I remember that it just would have been really difficult to serve that mission if we were open to everybody. That was really, you were always really solid on that focus. I think that was really important for the success of the program.
Well, law enforcement had been disappointed with behavioral health for a long time. And you think about the model that was kind of there, and it was like behavioral health professionals, they'd deal with their folks until it got really bad, and then they'd walk away and call the cops, and that was not a good model. It's okay to call law enforcement, it may be even appropriate sometime, but you need to be there side by side with them. And I knew the worst thing we could do would make some promise to law enforcement that we didn't keep because, once you've disappointed the law enforcement community, they're not going to have much to do with you after that.
So speaking of that kind of culture, Rick, that you bring up a great segue. So Ted, you start this job. I remember we kind of scared the group, if I recall, Rick. We gathered them, I think, in St. Louis, the whole group of the new ones at a conference, and we got them all in a room, and we're like, "This is the most important job you'll ever do, and the governor's counting on you, and we're counting on you." And I remember a few folks coming out of there being a little intimidated. But so you get this job, and tell us, like, starting out, like, how did law enforcement react, or can you kind of give us a feeling for how those first few months went?
Initially the job was to market ourselves, so to speak, to law enforcement, just basically saying that when you come across people that have some serious mental health issues or substance issues, you can call us and then we will do outreach and we will see if we can get them connected to help or resources or whatever they need. And it will not just be a one-time outreach and we leave them alone. We'll follow them up for a good month or however long it takes to try to get them connected to services. So I'm going around. I don't really know my job that well at this point. It's kind of new. And I'm talking to law enforcement about it. And I got meetings with a lot of officers, not all that I tried. Here's how I was thinking about it. I tend to be busy at my job. Somebody comes to me and says, "Hey, I've got this great resource." I smile and say, "Thank you. See you later." And then I forget about it after a while. And I think that's what was going on some of the time with some offices. There were a few offices. So in my area, there were 15 sheriff's departments slash municipalities that I was talking to. Some of them probably were not. Well, I'm not going to say probably. Some of them were not interested really at all in what I was talking about. And some of them were interested. So at least I would get a chance. I would just say, please send people to me and stuff like that. So there were times that I got sent folks. And initially it was like, I need to do a good job here to kind of prove that there's value here. And that happened a few times. And it was and then I became very popular after some successes. So
The word spreads sometimes.
It's not and not just I'm just talking myself, but I mean there were 31 of us around the state. Every county was covered. My job covered five counties, rural areas. There were some CBHLs that had 10 counties. I think one had 10 counties. And then in St. Louis, Kansas City, I think there were more than one in counties. But yeah.
No, we had some geographic areas and challenges for some CBHLs when we started, that's for sure. And we'll talk more about that culture and kind of how you saw that change over time too. But tell me a little too. So, like, then to your point about geography, like, tell me, so you had five counties, those courts, and 15 agencies. And as they get to know you, I'm sure it becomes a little overwhelming. So then we had a new governor, Governor Parson, a former sheriff, and a decision was made that, hey, if we had resources, what would we want to do with them? And I think everybody immediately said, we're stretched too thin on CBHLs. And so we get 50 more added to the budget using that new CCBHC financing method, which was great. And so what happens then to you, Ted, as you see another CBHL come in, and then another youth, and then a youth position liaison come in? Like, so how did it all change? How did that all come down for you?
I was initially I was my a different agencies decided to do this a little bit differently. So my agency decided to split the job, not by county, but by I guess by referral source. So I was asked, like, do I want to Do I want to just focus on courts and jails, or do I want to just focus on law enforcement? And I wasn't excited about giving anything up. I thought, this is, I like all of it. So I wasn't overly excited about that. But what has evolved and what has happened is that we have, I'm now the courts and jails person. And Gabby, who I think you might know Gabby, but
I've heard of her.
yeah, she is the law enforcement CBHL. It has, and then with the youth ones coming in, the amount of referrals that we have gotten has increased dramatically. I think that it has given, I'll just speak for myself here, it's given me the ability to really focus a lot more in specific areas. And Dr. Gowdy was talking about how we were going to be stretched pretty thin. And really, I think the initiative was very smartly rolled out and smartly done. We were not taking referrals from anybody besides courts and law enforcement, just to try to keep it really tight. But it was, it was a big area, lots of offices, and so I'd get busy from some offices, not as busy for others. So I would take more time at the offices I was busy with. Well, when new CBHLs came in and YBHLs, youth behavioral health liaisons came in, I just focused more and on the fewer offices that I had, and then started getting more referrals from some of those offices. And so it's really expanded. The amount of referrals that we get is like in total is probably, I don't know, four or five, six times what I was getting when I was doing it by myself.
No, that's great. And I always think, when Rick talked headlines a little bit and those the tragedies, and I always kind of, I know this to be true, and it's hard to quantify, but you all do such amazing work. Those referrals all could be a source of a really bad outcome, and you guys do incredible work on keeping folks out of those situations and headlines, and that happens every single day, and we're so grateful for that work you do, Ted. And for the listener, the Gabby reference, that's the connection we all have with Rick, and that's my daughter who was the soccer player. And Rick avoided giving her any yellow or red cards, I think, for the most part. Not that she never got a yellow or red card, but not from Rick. So that's good news there. But thanks for that shout, Ted. So yeah, a lot of different changes to the program, and like you said, I think some divided the counties up a little bit more. So instead of 10 counties, maybe they just had five, but yeah, Compass here centrally did more of the targeted focused approach, which is working well too. All right. So, Rick, back to you. So, you mentioned Governor Nixon. Do you have any memories? I certainly have some. You mentioned him as a cheerleader, but do you have any memories of those early days and rolling out and his pride in the program or anything else you want to kind of bring up about that time?
As I said earlier, he really became a champion and a cheerleader for this program. He held a number of roundtables across the state where he would go into a community. A lot of them were in rural areas, and he would invite law enforcement officials and the CBHLs, and they would sit around a table and they would just talk about issues and what cooperative initiatives were occurring. And it was really exciting to see, to see the governor, the CBHL, the sheriff, the chief of police. In these small communities, and I think those meetings were important for a couple of reasons, at least in my mind. One, it highlighted behavioral health services in a very public and a very positive, high profile kind of way. When you have that kind of attention from a governor, it's so important. And it also helped to solidify the idea that behavioral health services are work best when service delivery is determined locally about how are we going to do this in our community, because what they do in St. Louis is different than what they're going to do down in Butler County or somewhere. So I think that those meetings were very important for that. The governor, he loved data, so I'd have to go over every now and then and present data. And he had a really had a really quick mind, and he got data and he loved looking at it. But one of the things he said that was so important, he goes, you know, one of the things about this, though, is that this is prevention, and you're never going to be able to prove all the things that don't happen because of what you did. But these numbers show, it's just what you said, Brent. It just, we don't have these headlines because of this program. And the governor got that. And you know, really, the CBHLs got off the ground, Brent, because of this long partnership that the Department of Mental Health had with the Missouri Behavioral Health Council. And they really flourished and prospered because of those really newly formed community stakeholder coalitions. And I'll tell you, I hadn't told you this yet, Brent, but the governor, he still remains interested in this. I had some email correspondence with him at the 10-year anniversary, and he still remains proud and interested in what they're doing. You know, here we are 10 years later, but he still remains interested in that.
It really did, Rick, give him, he was sharp as could be, and he those meetings really did give him a voice around mental health. I think he had one. He had a long history with back with Comtree and Jefferson County where he grew up, and I think he had a voice. But man, that CBHL and those meetings, I think it really did solidify him. He's now been recognized as a, you know, mental health champion by the foundation, and deservingly so. And then Ted, it reminds me, Rick, I don't know if you're aware, but we're in the process right now of doing these sequential intercept model SIM mapping meetings, and Ted's been a part of many of them here in Central Region. But it kind of reminds me, just like what you said, of gathering all those different groups together around a table and spending a day and a half or so, kind of finding out where those gaps are and what we can do to improve them. And Ted, I think those have been really important as far as it's hard to get those groups together. I mean, it takes a logistically and timing, it's a pain to get that to work out for everybody. But even with the relationships you have, it's just remarkable to me that we still got to take that time to re-engage on those systems across those counties and all those different players.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big piece of like, if a person is not healthy, mentally healthy, and they sometimes they don't know it, or they're not willing to work on it and stuff like that. There are huge issues with people that are not very motivated to get help, or don't, just for whatever reason. And so communities, the criminal justice system, behavioral health system, they deal with people that come, repeatedly through the systems. And so the SIM workshops are really to try to get the get everybody together, behavioral health, criminal justice, get everybody together to see how we can improve what we do. I think we do a lot of things well. Just communicating resources to everybody in the community is an important thing, but just trying to problem solve about how we can do even better with folks.
No, those are really important. I had not really put that together, but those Governor Nixon was an early SIM mapper, really, in a way. So that's cool. So Ted, with you and the job, I mean, you've been doing it now for over a decade. And anything stick out to you? Anything in particular, or just a kind of one type of thing that has stood out to you over those years, or anything that just really you'd like to share in all the years you've been doing this important work?
So one of the nice things I think about this position is that there's so many pieces to it. So I mean, initially there was like, I don't know, there was a guy that had serious mental illness that was in jail in one of my counties, and he'd been there for about, I think he'd been there for 10 months. He was in isolation the whole 10 months. He couldn't really be in the general population because of his behavior. And he had a domestic against his parents who he had been living with. So he wasn't the court wasn't going to release him back there, but he just wasn't. They're like, we let him out of jail. We pursue these charges and let him out of jail. He's going to be going to nothing. And they felt like it was just safer just not to pursue charges and keep him in jail. But the jail was, they were pulling their hair out. I mean, he was spreading feces on the wall. He was talking to people that weren't there. And so I got involved and basically just kind of worked with the public administrator who was his guardian and some different, we looked at different options for placement for him. And just, I was like, I'm not going to say I did everything because I didn't, but I mean, I was part of a team that within a few months, he got placed in, I think it was like in a nursing home that was able to handle him and get him medicine that he needed. And he just, he did, I think he did a lot better there. Certainly just some people with mental illness living in isolation is just not, I mean, it's just, it's a bad setup. But that was one, that was an initial one that stood out. And that was one that the jail and then law enforcement were like, oh my gosh, this is really helpful. So there have been many issues like that. And then just being involved sometimes. So one of the things that I never thought about law enforcement was how they deal with mental health. I, as a counselor, would people would come into my office and talk with me about the stuff they were struggling with, but it wasn't like they were having the moment right then. Law enforcement deals with things in the moment. I mean, at people at their worst in a crisis situation, sometimes suicidal, sometimes scared that people that they think exist are going to kill them and they need help. And so they are dealing with crisis situations. And I think, it's been really nice for me to be able to be a resource for not only for the folks that they deal with, but sometimes for law enforcement, because some of the things that they deal with and they see, you know, just their people. And so, yeah, just being able to be a piece of being helpful in all kinds of different situations has been really, really nice. And there are other companies, I could go on. There are like CIT, I think we're going to talk about that. That's been a big deal.
We'll definitely talk about that. And Ted, I want to hit on that a little bit because Dr. Gowdy, when we created this, and it was never early on, I never remember one mention at all about how this could be a resource to help our law enforcement community with their own mental health. I remember it being very forward looking to the community and to the folks that we're both running into and how we can be a service in helping those situations. I think that offshoot of how once they got to know Ted, people started talking to Ted, and I use Ted as a the broader CBHL, just the Teds across the state. But yeah, that became a really significant resource where I've heard just specific story after specific story of a bad accident, and folks responded to it and needed to talk to someone. And now we're doing debriefs, and we've started up a network of peers that can maybe talk to folks outside of the clinic, because law enforcement typically doesn't want to go into a compass where they might have already take, who they take folks to, and so they don't want that setting. So I've just seen this huge growth in kind of how we are trying to help our law enforcement community, but that was never really the original intent. But what an amazing offshoot of that, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. We are doing that. There is a network of providers that specifically provide services to mental to law enforcement officials. You know, we do a couple of days of critical incident debriefing with folks and work with folks that have experienced traumas. And again, I believe that came from the relationships. You know, there's something. You know, going to see a counselor is kind of scary, but talking to Ted's not, because you know Ted and you're familiar. And you know, I will be honest, I didn't think we would ever break through that thin blue line of being able to openly discuss officer wellness. For too many years, we burn out and burn up peace officers and their families. And now, and what's been interesting is now we've had some of our CIT folks who have penetrated the command structure. Our two statewide coordinators, one's now a captain, one's a sheriff, and we're just changing how law enforcement looks at wellness. And it is, it's as important a part as being physically fit for them, I think. And the younger officers are coming to see it as something that's acceptable. So, that was an unintended consequence, but it is such a tremendous effort, and I'm so pleased to see it, but I didn't think we ever would in my professional lifetime.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Rick, perfect segue. So, I love this part of the story too, because Missouri was a, at least, as we started this CBHL, we started these relationships with law enforcement. You mentioned the Strengthening Missouri Initiative, and a part of that was a little money, not much at all. I think it was maybe 150,000, but a little chunk of money for CI st statewide CIT, I think. And you were a huge leader in that. And if I remember right, when we started, we had a CIT group out of Kansas City and St. Louis and Columbia, and they'd meet once a month or once a quarter, and you'd go to those, or Angie would, or whomever. And then we started to get some CBHLs that would start, were starting to become a little bit of a part of that. And I remember you either came to my office. I think you might have even driven to, this is way pre-COVID, so we, we're driving to each other's offices then. And you kind of said, hey, what if we kind of combine some efforts here a little bit and see if you guys could help support and grow this CIT thing? So you tell us a little bit about that, because I think some of the most proud work that I've ever been a part of is this CBHL and CIT work. So what do you remember about those early CIT days?
Yeah, that was a the second, that was another component of Governor Nixon's Strengthening Mental Health Initiative, and at that time we had some CIT efforts in Missouri, as you said, in pockets of the state, but it wasn't coordinated at all, and it wasn't coordinated. It didn't have a vision, and it wasn't statewide, and there weren't any efforts to make it statewide, and that's what we wanted to do. And two things were key to that, I believe. One was hiring the state CIT coordinator. That was critical to that. And we got so lucky in doing that. Our first one was at then Sergeant Jeremy Romo, who did such a tremendous job. And after him, it was then Detective Jason Klaus out of Perry County. Jeremy's out of St. Louis County, and Jeremy's now a captain, and Detective Klaus turned into Sheriff Klaus. And so hiring those statewide coordinators was critical. And also the logistical support that we were able to give them through the Missouri Behavioral Health Council was so critical. Because in those early days, I'd go to these meetings and these groups would get together and they'd have these good ideas and they'd talk about them. And then all these cops would go back to their busy jobs, and we'd come back to the next meeting and we'd talk about good ideas and they'd throw them out and then they'd all go back to their busy jobs. But once the council was able to provide that logistical support, it's really kind of the glue that it really, I believe, has helped hold all of this together with the CIT. And yeah, we've just, I used to say I thought we had the best CIT system in the nation, but I believe it's the best CIT system in the world. I really do.
Yeah, that's amazing. And Ted, I know CIT's an important part of what you do, and we'll probably do a whole show on that as well, but you can't disengage it from the CBHL program because of the connections you have to that program. So how did you start kind of becoming involved, and how has it kind of changed what you do, or how you've seen it grow over time?
So we were told when soon early in the early in when I started the job, we were told to ask offices like law enforcement offices if they're interested in CIT. So there was no CIT in any of my counties that I covered. I went up and sat in on some meetings in Columbia, so I had a little bit of a flavor for it after a bit of time. But I would go initially. I didn't know much about CIT either, but I'm going and asking law enforcement, "Are you interested in CIT?" And they said, "What's CIT?" And I thought at that point I didn't know that much about it either. So I was like, "Well, I don't know." I mean, not a good way to marketing. But I was just it was just cracking me up. It's like I don't. Looking back on it, it's like I wasn't that informed. I was a little informed. I kind of knew that I knew it, but I hadn't lived it. But we had at that time Sergeant Romo, now Captain Romo. We had, I guess, St. Mary's Hospital. This was in Jeff City, St. Mary's Hospital, and I were working on bringing CIT to Central Missouri. So we kind of partnered. St. Mary's, like SSM, I guess that they were SSM at the time, but they in St. Louis they had CIT, and so some of the workers were interested in it. So we partnered and had Sergeant Romo come and talk about CIT, and I will say that it went from so a lot of law enforcement from the area were invited to that. And I could talk about it all day and try to sell it, but there's nothing like having it sold by an officer who, officer to officer is the best thing. And Sergeant Romo did a really good job. And so when he left, Sergeant Mathern at the Jeff City Police Department, he comes to me and said, "I want to do this." And so he and I started working on it through the counties, and we got a CIT training organized, and several officers in now the five county region are trained and involved in meetings that we have. So it's really grown. And
Ted, I remember an early story in one of the meetings, just how it solved a real critical issue for folks down at the lake, transporting folks up to the Jeff City, and how working together through that council, they developed kind of a protocol of how they could do that better and more efficiently. And just over and over, it seems like if you can get the behavioral health piece right, or at least better, it sure does provide relief for those law enforcement officers to focus on other parts of their job that are equally as important. So,
That's right. The more efficient the system is, it's better for everybody. It's better for law enforcement. It's better for the person that's struggling. And that's what we work on in the CIT councils.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And Rick, we talk about it. You've been a part of this, were a part of it at its creation, and you've seen it grow over the years. Talk about just a little bit the, we call it the white to yellow to blue map, and then you've been in attendance at every CIT conference, and talk about how those both have changed.
Yeah, so the first conference we had was a relatively small affair. It was at a small venue there on the University of Missouri campus, and it was pretty apparent to me quickly that many of those in attendance were told they had to come. And Brent, I've given talks at national conventions. I've given grand rounds at medical schools. I've used to present at the Judicial College all of the time. There is no tougher audience than a bunch of cops. I can remember that first conference, just, officers sitting there with their arms folded as I'm talking. And now you look, this last conference we had this year, there are literally hundreds of peace officers and behavioral health specialists there together, all working towards a common goal. And it is just, it's to me, it's still thrilling, even after all these times. It's still thrilling to go in there and see that crowd of folks that shows up at these conferences.
I agree, and Ted's been to many of them too, and I'm so impressed and proud of that conference, the planning committee, the topics they bring in. I know Dr. Gowdy, you have deservingly so a legacy award that they give to people who've really had that impact to the system, and that's well deserved. And it's just such a cool thing. And I agree, Rick. We don't do things perfect. We have parts of our system that still need improvement, and I always say that because we've had things that have been said about Missouri and what we could do better, and we work on it all the time and try, but boy, we don't do a good enough job kind of stepping back a little bit and being grateful for the really amazing things that we have going on in Missouri and some of the great initiatives and program and people we have involved in that. Ted, we appreciate all that you do. And Rick, we appreciate everything that you did to get us where we are today. So thank you both very much. We've taken a lot of your time. I think we've kind of neared the end of our time to be together today. And Rick, really, and Ted, two legends in the field. I say that with, and I mean it completely. Both Rick, your work on keeping us all moving the right direction, being kind of the North Star of the programs and where we wanted to take this thing, and making sure it was going the right way. And then Ted, from being the OG, one of the originals, sticking with it and doing incredible work and being a resource to really the entire state as we've transitioned a lot of CBHLs through the program, who've Jeremy and Jason moving up into supervisory and other roles in organizations. I love that we move people up that understand this work and what is important to do true community service and community mental health. And so, great spending time with you both. Thank you so much for everything you do and what you've done to help Missourians in this state. So, thank you guys both so much.
Our pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for wrapping another episode of Show Me State of Mind, and we'll get back together soon. Thanks.